So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, what's going on, my friend?
Oh, same old, same old. It's been a crazy week, right? Getting ramped up, getting ready for the week or the wrestling world as we move forward. Been watching the DDT D-King. Been a lot of fun with that. Really a lot of great matches. We talked about even possibly covering it, but it's just, it's so much, and I didn't want to cover just parts of it, but yeah, that's right. Been really good. Other than that, I mean, wrestling has been a little crazy. How you been, Pete?
Doing good, yeah. 2018 is off to a lot of highs, a lot of lows so far. What can you say? I made my first trek to a wrestling event up in San Antonio called RCW Wrestling. And I think Hernandez is like the teacher, or I believe. I mean, this is what I'm kind of speculating on. And it's mostly used to, it's mostly a student show that they have some, like, bring in a couple things, like they, like Katie Forbes, who I don't think she's not a big name or anything, is she?
No, I'm not familiar with that name at all. So no, I would say she's
Yeah,
not.
I think she's like a local big name type of thing. But what they do is they bring in a lot of ex, like, WWF stars or stars from the past, and they do, like, the, you know, the meet and greet autograph thing. And I think they draw their houses a lot based around those guys, and then they are able to provide a wrestling show that was fun. It was a 5-match show, maybe 2.5 hours long. It went blew by real fast. It was cool. I mean, Ricky Steamboat got to be my idol. I was super pleased with that. Jimmy Hart was super cool. Like, you know, next month, I think they have, like, James Ellsworth in the main event. They've run it in the past where, like, last time they had a show, Jake the Snake was there. And before that, it was Rikishi. So what they kind of do is they, I'm assuming they fly. I don't know. But I think they might just fly in these guys, put them up at a hotel, and they tell them, instead of paying them a booking fee, maybe they tell them, hey, you can keep all the money on all the autographs and pictures you take, or maybe there's a little bit of both, I'm not sure. But that's kind of what they build the show on, is, hey, look, the big star is here to sign autographs, and they do an angle, or like Jimmy Hart managed somebody. Ricky Steamboat was the special outside the ring enforcer in the cage match. And then that's how they kind of build their shows on. And they probably drew about 300 people, which is a healthy amount of people with no one really of substance on the card besides Hernandez, who has any outside really. I mean, you had Barbie Hayden, who was your special referee in the women's match, but I still wouldn't say she's a huge. I mean, she doesn't mean a jack for ticket sales or anything. But it was a solid show. The opening match was Crimson Cadet retained his RCW Phoenix Championship, defeating Marty C. Might have been my favorite match on the card, from working the crowd, telling a story. That was a good, solid opener. The second match is Paige Turner, and she does kind of like a shush librarian gimmick, and she retained her title against Katie Forbes, who I didn't really care for the match. Hernandez beat Xavier Daniels. It was okay. I hate, one of my pet peeves is when you blow a spot and you go right back to it. I've always said, blow the spot, go back to it 5-10 minutes later. You don't have to go right back to it, and they blew this clothesline spot, and they went right back to it. It's just then we had Jimmy Hart managed David Leitch, and he defeated Joey Spector to become the new RCW champion. He does, like, this cook-chef gimmick. It was kind of low-rent. I kind of felt bad for Jimmy Hart. And then there was the main event was Rob Love and Brandon Groom defeated Anthony Andrews and Paul Titan in a cage match. And I thought Steamboat was, you know, excellent working the outside as the enforcer. You know, they did the token thing of him getting to beat the crap out of the heel manager, set up some chop spots for him, you know, did what they needed to do. Nothing, you know, it wasn't like a, I thought it was a perfectly fun show for someone to bring their kids to meet legends. And there's a lot of kids in the audience. It's a family friendly show for the most part. I mean, even though there was blood in the main event, I had a fine time. Am I ever going to go out there again? Probably not. Unless there's something interesting on the card or they bring out a legend I really want to meet. But for the most part, I don't foresee it happening. But you never say never in this wrestling industry. It's a different model that a lot of wrestling companies don't do. Do you think this is a viable model?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was looking, actually, myself, because there was a show last night that I was 50-50 about going to last minute, run by a company called Maverick Pro. I think it was last night. It might be tonight. No, I think it was last night. And they had, like, nothing but locals from kind of out here in Southern California, which does include, you know, some names you might think of, like because they're on Lucha Underground and stuff, but no one, like, huge, like Luchasaurus, Mariachi Loco, right? But then they had, like, this one women's match that has Katie Lee Burchill from WWE and TNA, and then Carly Katrina from WWE, and then, like, another local who's obviously probably going to take the pin, and it's like, it did seem like you probably are paying more for that one match than any other match on the fucking card. And it is kind of weird to think about, like, why some of these shows, they do that. Like, is that really bringing anybody out to have this one super inflated match with ex-WWE names? I don't know if it's viable or not. It's a weird move, but I guess there's more and more people who have that kind of ex-WWE cachet still that are kind of coming back out of the woodwork because they took time off because wrestling was dead and now wrestling's getting hot again. So I don't know if it's necessarily viable, but I think that it's going to work right now just because there's increased interest in wrestling in general, right?
Now, like for right now, for Ellsworth, I think it works because he's a memorable character. People really genuinely like the character, and it's a well-known character, and it's still pretty hot right now, right?
Right, and it attracts mainstream fans who just remember him and ironic hardcore fans who liked the character because it was funny, you know? So it does have a double edge on that, too.
Right, and then, like, building around the show with Steamboat and Jimmy Hart, Hall of Famer, so that gives the show kind of credibility in a way. And I can tell you, they offered two things, which was you could buy a VIP ticket to get into the show early or general admission. I just did general admission because I've never been to one of their shows, so I wasn't about to pay extra money on something I didn't know what's what. And so I didn't get to see and usually the VIP people who are buying there, they're for sure buying the Steamboat and the Jimmy Hart picture and autograph package, right?
Yeah, of course, you know.
Yeah, so if they're the ones getting in there early. So I got in there just on general admission. I couldn't see Jimmy Hart as well, but I could see Steamboat because he was on a big stage. And during just the regular admission, I bet he signed 40 autographs and took 40 pictures. And, I mean, so I would bet you, I bet he probably did at least a total of like 100 of those things. And so I think he probably made like $300 or $400. I bet on there, if not even more. So, I mean, I think he did a pretty good day. I think you should be happy with that type of payoff for go and chop a couple guys. And who knows? They might have even paid him a booking fee for all I know. I don't know. But to me, it seemed pretty successful for the guy. He had a long line the whole entire time, except for towards the end of the regular admission. So it seemed like it was a success in getting people in there and them spending their money to see the guy.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it probably worked, especially Steamboat, I think, is different. I mean, Steamboat is a legend among, like, all-time legend, you know? So I think,
yeah.
Even my brother, who's a full 11 years younger than me, I think when he first started watching wrestling, Steamboat was his number one guy. I mean, it was Kenny Omega and Richie Steamboat, which is like the perfect kind of amalgamation, I think, of me and you as wrestling fans. But, you know, he was like, when he was really getting hardcore, he was dropping money to get the Best of Steamboat DVDs and stuff. So he's a guy who's just like classic all-time legend. So for sure he's going to draw. But yeah, there's other people where you do kind of question. I think especially TNA, like people, I don't think necessarily know that they do much for your drawing at all. Someone who's been on TNA, you know?
No, I agree. I just think it's a pretty interesting package to do something like that. Because honestly, nowadays it's hard for... There's not that many indie guys who mean that much to the house, you know?
Right, and it's it kind of got talked about when I was doing my top 50 with Quentin about the air kind of getting sucked out of the room when Chris Hero left the indies when it came to talent, and then now there's like a revolving cast of, I'd say, like the top 20 independent wrestlers who have all the best matches rather than it being Chris Hero always having the best match. And I think that that's also kind of the situation with star power, too. I think that there's about probably 20 to 30 guys who anyone really gives a shit about enough to where they're going to go out and buy a ticket. And they're kind of their fans are intermixed with all the hardcore fans. So it's like, you know, if you're a big fan of guy A, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're a big fan of guy B. And so they're not interchangeable that way, the way that star power kind of used to be. And I think a lot of that has to do with that wrestling now is about wrestling. It used to be about promos and, you know, the guys who could do great interviews and star power. And that was kind of universally, I think you could kind of swap, you know. There's some guys who are obviously better promos. But, I mean, when it comes down to it, if you're a fan of Ric Flair because he's a great promo, I think you're still going to be a fan of Dusty Rhodes because he's also a great promo. But when it comes to wrestling, it's like, you know, me and Brock Yonke, who's also doing the big 100 match podcast with Quentin, that's going to be crazy. Like, we're both hardcore wrestling fans, but if you put on a show, Jeff Cobb, I'm going to go 9 times out of 10. I'm going to go to see Jeff Cobb, and Brock's not going to care. You know what I mean? So it's just like, it's kind of that thing where it's like, it's just not interchangeable. It just really isn't when it comes to your liking these guys based more about their in-ring work than just their star power and promo ability.
Yeah, well, you know, well, Hero was a draw. Cody was a draw. Now Cody doesn't do indies, really, because he's, you know, tied up with the Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
That left a huge vacuum, and there's not a whole lot of people out there who have seized the momentum. I mean, I would say Matt Riddle would be one of them.
But even him, I'm not going to a show because Matt Riddle's on it. Like, me personally.
But I think you're in the minority.
Right.
And if you look at it, I think he's going to be a huge draw mania for his Bloodsport show.
Yeah, I think that show's going to be fantastic. I'm actually kind of positive on that. I'm hoping that Bloodsport kind of is modeled after Ambition. And then it could be something really cool. But yeah, I think that's going to do super well for them. Joey Janela, when you talk about that, Joey Janela, his spring break, and I think in general, he's, you know, I mean, anecdotally, he's a draw for me. I'm going to bar wrestling to see him. So
Janela's been turned into a decent draw.
Yeah.
I don't want to say he's the highest end of the draws.
No.
Like, I mean, I think Riddle usually, I mean, it's just like, yeah, but there's just not, they just don't have it anymore. After Hero and Cody, there really isn't that many. Like, this guy is a legitimate indie draw. I think if you're paying him, you're paying him because you want him on your show, as opposed to he's going to get you X amount more fans than he normally would. And honestly, I think part of it with Riddle is still with his UFC buzz. He is probably one of the more charismatic guys on the indie shows. There's really, well, honestly, there's just not that much. Like out there, like Russell Circus announced their return lineup. I'm really not all impressed with all what's on there. I mean, we've seen bigger talent on the shows. I think them canceling really burned them. I think they're gonna have to take a while for the talent to trust them again. And you could tell that you could tell by who's on that show and not. You know, it's a bunch of the guys who are it's pretty much a lot of the same old. You know.
Yeah, I mean, and that happens, and they're going to learn a lesson that Chikara learned a few years back, which is that taking time off also just completely kills your buzz, man. I mean, people don't—they just don't care as much when you've been gone. You got
they did sell out the front row already, so I mean, for the hardcore Circus fans, and there's a lot of them, them announcing coming back, they could have announced a lineup of total schmoes, and I think they still would have sold out the front row because there's a lot of Russell Circus marks out there. I mean, online, you can tell online there's a big cult following on Russell Circus, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's people who love that place, and I can't blame them because it's, you know, it's bringing
there's a lot of good matches,
Texas.
A lot of talent. But I think it's one of those things where I'm always more frustrated because they do get a lot of stuff and they can do it a lot better than what they do stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But speaking of something doing it right, Powerbomb TV, it looks like they're going to be streaming eight live streams in the first 2 months of the year. That's huge, because that's going to get people talking about it, because bottom line is people want to see current wrestling now. They don't want to wait a week or two. People, we've gotten spoiled. And the live stream, I think that's kind of like the make or break on what it's going to do for Powerbomb and getting all these promotions willing to live stream. These guys, the key though is they got to deliver good shows, bottom line. But it's important for Powerbomb to really get a bigger audience by hitting home runs on these live streams. But this is good news, because we're able to talk about right then and there about the show going on, and I think that's anything but positive. I mean, over the years we've shown live wrestling matters when it comes to eyeballs and stuff, as opposed to being tape delayed, and I mean we learned that all the way back to the 1980s, starting at the Clash of Champions, and here at the Powerbomb streaming. All I can do is I think that's a good thing. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, it's, I mean, just you talk about too the WWE Network, how they, you know, they say that all the first run new content is what drives subscriptions, gets all the views. So, I mean, it's the same as that. It's smart. They're hitting it big. They're kind of doing what everyone was theoretically saying should be the thing. They are what Flow Slam was trying to pretend that it was. You know, they are actually doing that, which is great.
It gives a lot more variety than Flow Slam.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. Flow Slam was trying to act like they were going to be essentially what Powerbomb TV is becoming. And Powerbomb TV working out deals with Smart Mark to get key stuff on there. I love that. I mean, I can't speak, you know, too much to it. I don't know Adam Lash personally. I don't know Vin Gerard personally. I was a fan. I'm going to put that out there. I did like him as a wrestler. The way that they are willing to make deals and say, we're not going to be rigid. We're not going to say to Alpha One, okay, this is all we're going to get. Either we put everything on there, you let us have rights to everything, or else we want nothing to do with you. No, they're making deals with these companies. AIW, another one. And those key pieces are what make them special. They stand out. And I think that the people that they attract are the kind of people who are going to be understanding and say, you know what? Yeah, I might not get every brand new AIW show, but I can get what I need to get. I can get something. I can check out some retro stuff. Maybe it's not ever going to do a live stream. Maybe it's not always going to be the most current stuff, but that's fine. And that's the people that you're attracting for that. Then, you know, the hardcores who, the like uber hardcore for specific promotions, will go out and buy the brand new stuff, whatever. But the more passive fans are going to go for it. And again, that's a big plus, but the main thing that's going to drive the attention, drive the subscriptions, are the live shows, constantly streaming stuff, big stuff, making it really worth your value. Because I was also being talked about and told about this new WWN Club. Have you heard about this one?
I hear you can sign up, right? Let me tell me if I'm wrong. You sign up for whatever what is the prescription?
$10 a month.
Okay. But you get the Evolve shows 2 weeks later?
Yeah. So you sign up for $10 a month. You get the Evolve show essentially 2 weeks later. You get the back catalog. And then you get a 50% discount if you want to watch the show live. So you're still paying more on top of it to see it live.
That model, ask people to freaking pirate it. You know?
Exactly. That's what's going to happen. The people, this is how it's going to go. This is what this service is perfect for.
If I got to wait anyway, I might as well pirate and I can give you a fucking dime.
Yep. This is what this service is set up for. This service is set up for people who don't give a shit about the the company that much. There's no buzz for the company, so they don't care about watching it live. So they sign up for this, you know, back catalog maybe once or twice a year. They binge watch everything, and then they leave. And then the other side of it is the people who want to keep up to date, yeah, what they do is they just grab the shows off of, you know, the W or XWT, whatever, wherever they're grabbing them, they're torrenting it. And then they're watching it, you know, close enough to being live. They're streaming it.
They're watching it the next day, probably.
Yeah, they're watching it the next day, a couple days later. But yeah, I mean, this system is set up to essentially attract, you're going to get a little bit of money from some people who don't really give a shit about your company because there's not much to it, but they're crazy completists who want to put together their match of the year, wrestler of the year list at the end of the year.
And then there's also the 1% of the wrestling fan who are so morally above pirating that they'll buy that.
Right.
That's only 1% of wrestling fans.
Or the people who can't get onto the torrent sites because their IPs have been banned. Yeah. You know, that's the people who are going to do it, essentially.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. That's just, yeah, a business model, again, doomed for failure.
But meanwhile, Powerbomb TV, you talk about doing it right, they're doing it 100% right. 8 streams within the first 2 months. So essentially, yeah, you pay, what, $20, and you get 8 live shows and all the back catalog.
You're getting a show a week.
That is just the incredible bang for your buck, honestly.
Yeah, you're getting a show a week. Variety, and it's variety. It's not just all Evolve or and then the weaker shows on the freaking WWN network, and they get worse and worse, you know. Style Clash is okay. I'll give them that. But the other thing about the WWN, I've never understood it. So maybe it's the buildings they run, maybe it's advertising, but they don't draw shit except for during like WrestleMania unless they're running with the WWE on a big weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane. You would think that with everything else that they have going for them that they could draw at least a respectable crowd.
A house, you know?
Yeah.
You'd think they'd get at least 500 people into the building.
Yeah, it's crazy when you see some shows that look like they're running in front of 20 people at the most.
Yeah, you see Freddie Ehi working in front of 25 people. It's fucking disgusting.
Yeah, I know. One of the best wrestlers on the planet.
One of the top 10 workers, in my opinion, in the world.
Yeah.
And he's working in front of freaking 10 people, 25 people. Just shameful. Meltzer made the headlines again. What's going on with this guy?
Yeah, instead of writing the headlines, he's in the headlines, right? Just like always.
Yeah.
Well, so here's the thing. You really want to get the dirt and the real kind of breakdown on Meltzer. I say listen to Talk Is Sheet. Les Moore really fucking digs into the guy and breaks the whole story wide open. To me, that's the best place to get the full coverage on it. But here's my thing, okay? Meltzer fucked up. Meltzer is not covering a story very well when it comes to the allegations against Michael Elgin and Sean Orleans. But here's my thing. For me, I know that you have sent Meltzer reports and stuff over the years. So have I. And I don't know. Do you find that when you send something to Meltzer, I mean, you primarily are probably only sending like results, like stuff that actually happened on the shows, right?
Yeah, I haven't sent anything to him in probably about a year or two. I think the last thing I sent him was a little blurb about the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame I was at.
Right.
And then he asked me, send him more information, and so I did.
Okay. And if he uses it, he just puts it into the newsletter pretty much exactly word for word as you wrote it, right?
Yeah, or if I send in whenever I send in, like, my feedback on a pay-per-view or something, which I haven't done in a while, I always just sign the damn thing Pete, but if he puts it in, like, the letters pages or something, he always signs it Pete Schirmacher.
Huh.
Or if he puts it on the web, on his sheet, he signs my full name for something. But whatever.
But when he does it, he's not really editing you in any way. He's just putting.
No, not at all. It's all cut and paste. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and he doesn't really make it clear that that's what he's doing a lot of times. And so I'll just say, like, God, this was probably the last time I sent him anything. So this will just completely date how long it's been since I sent him anything. But I sent him something that was more of an opinion thing because I knew that, you know, he's going to get reports from PWG results from someone else, so I'm not even going to take my time to do it. But it was when the Four Horsewomen first showed up at PWG. And I wrote the report essentially explaining the way that they were acting at the show. And I said it was very clear that, you know, the most attentive fan out of the Four Horsewomen was Shayna Baszler. She obviously really cares about wrestling. And if any of them are going to become, you know, big-time wrestling stars, it's clearly going to be her. And he took basically everything that I said verbatim and just put it into his newsletter. And didn't mention that it was someone else's report. Didn't say, you know, where it came from, anything like that. So to me, it just shows that, like, the guy is not, he's not really a journalist. And that's what it really comes down to with, you know, and that's what Les kind of breaks down as well. It's something I've said for a long time. He reports things, he gives out results, he says kind of some of his opinions, but I don't consider Dave Meltzer a journalist, and I think that a lot of people kind of do expect him to be a journalist, and he's just really not. He gives some tips and maybe some kind of backstage rumors.
When you really think about it, and if you think about it, I would say not just Dave, but you look at even Wade Keller and the big ones in here, they're self-published. They're not published by a Sports Illustrated, or they're not published by the Sporting News. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, exactly.
So there's no one there to monitor them.
There's no accountability.
So it's like, who's monitoring, you know, it's like who's watching the watchers in a way. It's up to them to set the standards on the integrity issues and stuff, because they're the ones who are monitoring themselves. And now is it up to, like, the Roberts and the Lesses of the world to monitor them? If that's what it comes down to, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, it turns into a really complicated mess. I'll say that, though.
Yeah, and this whole thing has been really just disgusting, honestly. There's been a lot of stuff going back and forth that's really negative and shitty. And I don't know that necessarily any of it's necessary. I mean, I really don't. I think that some, you know, if you want to let it go and just say that you're not going to report on it, then just don't report on it. And then if people are bullying you because it's a big deal and, oh, this is an important story, you should be talking about it, I think you need to hold your guns there and say, I'm not going to say anything. But instead, Meltzer is, like, giving little pieces of stuff and making himself look even worse. I mean, he fucking posted some Tumblr of, like, a psychopath who's, like, obsessed putting together all of these crazy screen grabs and trying to figure out the truth. I mean, this is, like, conspiracy theory level stuff that Dave Meltzer is giving as, like, his grounds for, like, tacitly endorsing, like, this is the real dirt on this story. That's, like, depressing for someone who people respect, you know what I mean? Like, for him to do something like that, it's just kind of crazy.
Part of the problem is, again, I mean, like, self-publishing, Dave comes from the era when he first started doing it, where it was a very closed-circuited group, and so he was able to get sources now. But now it's so wide open that like almost everybody has sources that Dave he's kind of like behind the times when it comes to, you know, he's always clamoring about how people can't grasp the new style of wrestling. Well, in a way, he's not grasping how open the business is, in a sense that people know what's going on behind the scenes. And if you're keeping mum about certain stuff or not breaking a story, people know about it. It's not something you can hide anymore because of how close in it. I mean, Vince McMahon allegedly was able to cover up Jimmy Snuka's involvement in a murder for years, but it finally came to light, you know? And that's the same type of instance. I'm not trying to compare the two in a way, but it's now things are just so more open and out there that he's Dave Meltzer's that Carney guy. He's Rip Rogers. He's one of those guys from the old school that doesn't see the. He's Jim Cornette in a way, you know.
Yeah, no, he really is, and like he's. I think he feels more camaraderie with the wrestlers, for sure. I think he actually feels kind of like he was broken in as one of the boys, if you really think about it, from becoming a journalist for the whole thing. And I think, yeah, like, there's a lot of people now who are journalists who didn't have... I mean, fuck, there's wrestlers now who didn't have that same kind of breaking in about protecting the business and all this stuff. So I think that's part of it, too, is he's old school in a lot of ways to the way that the business is treated, and it's... it's becoming an issue because, yeah, there are more people who are willing to just flat out say, I mean, yeah, the idea that there are people coming out there and they say, like, I know what Dave knows and he's not reporting this story. People are like, there are dozens of people who are saying that, and it's kind of crazy to think of that people say that. Like, they're calling him out for not reporting, so, like, saying, I know what he's been told because I'm hearing the same rumors, and that's so weird to think of as, like, something happening in media, or I guess just on Twitter in general.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's so weird because, like, Dave is, like, really close. I think he's more closely in line with the talent nowadays than he was back in the day. I mean, he had his close-knit group back in the day, but I think now everyone wants to nestle up to Dave in a way, the wrestlers-wise, because they, you know, they grew up reading his newsletter, and so he's almost like an icon in a way. And then he has his followers who will defend him to the end of the world, end of the earth. Like, he can do no wrong. And then there's people who see it more in a gray area where they know when he fucked up and they can call him out on it. And so it leads to just a whole freaking ball, just big old shit burger of a mess, huh?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe what's going on right now.
Then that leads us to CWF, which is our promotion. We cover it every week. Brad Stutz got fired, and, you know, everyone was abuzz about it. Bruce Mitchell released a newsletter or did an article on it, kind of pretty much covering most of the facts about it and stuff. I just want to say what Brad did was reprehensible. He disappointed me. With that said, you can't take away what he did for that company. He helped build it. I mean, have you listened to Johnny P's recent Road Diaries? Everyone, that's must listen to right now in light of the company, Brad not having the book. That company used to only just push a main event. This last Battlecade, every match on that show, there was a reason why, okay? That's called good booking. And for people to take away that he wasn't an impact, and sure, maybe lately, because of all his issues he was having and who he was hanging out with, might have led to him, his booking not being as good as what it once was. This Battlecade was brilliantly laid out. The booking was strong. What the company did, they needed it. What the company did, I have no problem with that. What they did, they had to protect their company against pretty much having somebody in there who was willing to break the law. I hate to say, but what Brad did was, I mean, I hope he learns from it and grows out of it, and not grows out of it, but I hope he just focuses on things that's not illegal. And he was able to move forward. But I'm a little nervous about the company. I think they have a great talent roster. But WCW had a great talent roster. They went out of business. They need to have a strong booker. Yeah, Trevor Lee booked his main event program. Trevor Lee, I thought, had an incredible 2016. Thought he had a great first half of 2017. I thought his second half of 2017 was showing becoming a little shaky. And I felt like Battlecade was kind of his Emperor Has No Clothes moment, with how it was booked, how it was finished. He was essentially, spoiler alert if you don't want to hear it, I'm going to pause for 20 seconds so you can fast forward this. He was essentially Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon back in 98 and 97. He felt it was more his booking, his last few things ever since the Nick Richards defense, where he had the opportunity to kind of make Nick Richards his Randy Savage to Trevor Lee's Hulk Hogan in a way. Never trained. He didn't do the job, which is fine. But he's been coming across more as a bully in character-wise. he was against all these odds and no other baby faces came out to help him. Is that part of the commentary never covered it? So I'm a little nervous. I mean, yeah, Trevor Lee, if he's able to go back to the Trevor Lee of earlier in the year, then yeah, they'll still have a strong title defense. But the key for these other guys is to have a booker who can line up these stories. And you have Brad, who was a really strong booker. I thought he was the best booker in wrestling. In the last couple of years, I've seen by turning out this little company in the middle of Middle Charlotte that's become, I mean, what do you call it, Tim? A cult following online?
Oh, yeah. I think it's definitely what I would call critically acclaimed.
I think a lower level ECW-esque, I would say, maybe.
Yeah, for sure.
And he had the fingerprints all over it. Sure, he was able to get a roster. And these talent, there's a lot of great talent there, from Trevor Lee to Eric Royal. You have Eric Royal and Trevor Lee, the backbones of that school, developing the Kane Justices, the Snooty Foxes, the Dirty Daddies. You made the Sandwich Squad into one of the top 20 tag teams in the world right now. You were able to have Eric Andrews turned into a hell of a worker. Lee Valiant, Rick Converse, all these guys. I mean, and if I'm missing some, Nick Richards, and there are many more. Roy Wilkins, just guys who can go. They have great talent. But it's not all about talent. It's about making people care about the talent. And Brad and I felt Grant Sawyer, as his lieutenant booker, who booked most of the Rumble, who was in charge of the technical, shoots it, gets things, puts these guys in a position to look great. It's all a team effort. And if they don't find the right booker to replace it, it could be scary. I don't care how deep this roster is. Another one, CL Party, Cecil Miller. They're all fantastic in their roles. But the key is they're going to have to find the right person to lay it out. Everyone might not know, Coach Gemini, Jeff Rudd, he owns the company. He was, in my opinion, was not a very good booker. Really nice guy. They need to, if it was up to me, I'd honestly give the book to Grant. I think they need to find somebody going forward, because everyone, read Bruce Mitchell's article if you want to hear more about exactly what all went down and stuff, but it's rough. I mean, it affected a lot of people. A lot of fans was personally affected by it, because for all these different reasons. And I felt the company, they had no choice, and then they made the decision to protect their business. So I have no problem with that. In the future, I don't find out 5 years from now that they had enough evidence to fire him at Battlecade, then I'd feel a little fishy about that, because that just becomes more wrestling bullshit. And I hope my company that I love is above that. And clearly they all stood at a united front by dropping out of that one guy, Charlie Armstrong's show, the Modern Vintage show, because that guy's bad news, allegedly bad news. But they need to find the right guy to run the ship. And you're trying to replace a lead announcer and a lead booker. It's going to be tough. The key is consistency. And to me, Grant would make the most logical choice. I don't know if he wants the book or not. Of course, I don't even know if they're going to offer him the book, but to me, that makes the most logical step from a storytelling standpoint. If Brad was doing a bad job, then no, I would never suggest giving it to your lieutenant booker. But if things like there was in Bruce's thing, and they mentioned how he was late on a couple of his shows, getting the booking of the shows. Yeah, on TV, they really you couldn't tell on what we saw. I would have to say He would be my lead guy. I don't know who they're leaning towards. But, you know, I think they need to they did a lot of success in these last few years. They've really gotten a cult following. I was at two of the guys, Johnny P and JB, they were both part of the CWF FanCon. They're the ones who grouped it together. Everyone knows Johnny and I travel to WrestleManias and other wrestling trips. JB and I are tight, really good friends. He picked me up at the airport for FanCon, dropped me off at the airport for the air for me to fly home. Good guy. We talk a lot. And I'm not going to talk about what they're feeling, because that's not here in my place. Our show is about talking about what matches were good, what angles got over. So I feel like I can talk about finding the right booker for this company. And I felt like they had achieved a lot these last few years, and a lot of it was all – everybody has plays a part. It's not all Brad Stutz. Don't get me wrong. But he had played a huge part in it. Grant and his production played a huge part in it. The talent played a great part in it. And they're all intertwined. It's like almost like a triangle. If you chop off, it's like a three-legged table. You chop off one of the legs, it might not stand up anymore. So you got to find the right person to put into the to do creative, and be able to take charge of that locker room. I throw my opinion towards Grant. I don't know anybody else's resumes who would be a great booker. I don't know. Maybe they have somebody else in mind, but I hope they do. Because I want the positive momentum they've had these last few years to continue to grow, and this is the promotion I got behind, and I don't want it all of a sudden to feel like a completely alienated territory to me, even though a lot of the talent I'm familiar with. Tim, do you have any thoughts about any of this, what I said? Or
I mean, I'm with you for the most part. I agree that I think I really hope that they figure something out with a new booker who can fill in for Brad without stumbling, because they have been essentially building.
They're opening their tonight's their first show without Brad as the booker.
They did the RGL show, I think, but
they're still there.
Yeah, that's RGL. So that's, I don't necessarily know that that even counts. And was he still there for that? I thought he wasn't.
Yeah, he got fired the day right after that show. Yeah. I think.
Okay. Well,
according to Bruce's article, that's where I read it.
Yeah, maybe I didn't understand that. Coming from that, I mean, yeah, I'm excited to see where they go. I'm excited for Cecil, who's the lead commentary guy. I think he's going to do a good job. I think there's people ready to step up. And you talked about, people saying that Brad was not a big part of the booking. He was, he got more credit than he deserved. There's some people who are pretty vocal about saying that. I'll put it out there. There's a lot of people, I think we both know that there's a lot of people involved very particularly in CWF who also listen to this podcast. And I think for me personally, I'd love to hear those people come out and give some real concrete side to that. It's really easy to pile on when you're upset and say he was given more credit than he deserved. I'm not saying that he wasn't. I don't know. Okay?
But what I am saying, and it's easy to get everything mixed in the weeds on what he did, because what he did was freaking wrong.
Right.
And we're not justifying his behavior in any stretch or form of the thing. But we're not talking about, we're not investigative journalists here.
No.
What we talk about is what angles get over, what matches are good, why we're liking this television show. So this falls into our wheelhouse here on about booking and who's getting credit and not credit and stuff.
Right. So, yeah, basically that's my point. I mean, you say in, Bruce Mitchell's article, it flat out says, he showed up late. They had already booked something. He shows up late with a booking sheet. But to me, you know what that said without, directly saying it? Is that even though he showed up late with the booking sheet that they went with was his, even though they had all come up with something else. So, I mean, he was, I think, obviously, booking the show still. And that's it. I want to call it to people who are saying, like, oh, he's got more credit than he deserved, and he didn't deserve, like, How? Explain how, what credit do you think he gets that he didn't deserve, number one. And, yeah, like, if you want to come out and say it on your own, that's cool. I think that you should. People, especially people who are extra vocal about it. And if you want to, I don't know, say it off the record somehow, I think I would be open. My DMs are open. Come and tell me what it is, because I would love to hear from someone who knows why Brad didn't deserve the credit that he gets for being a good booker, because I gave him a lot of credit, and I don't want to have wrongly been giving him a bunch of credit for stuff that he didn't deserve, is basically what it comes down to. That said, I'm excited for the show. I loved Battlecade, and I think it was actually a pretty fortuitous break for them to have Brad gone right after Battlecade, because you can kind of reset in a natural way. Instead of trying to reset, you know, going into Battlecade. So that's kind of my two cents on the thing, and my call for maybe a little bit more transparency, because this whole thing has been as clear as mud, honestly, with a lot of people saying stuff that's cryptic and putting out a little bit here and there, but not being willing to really put their name to anything.
Yeah, and it all boils down to, are you saying these things because you're angry because of what he did? Because what he did is just, you know, just terrible. For that to happen. And so it's like, you know, I mean, and I understand that. I mean, you're hurt. Someone you knew did this. And so your natural instinct is to tear him down. I mean, I've seen it happen, and it's not just in the wrestling business. It's what have you done for me lately? It's even like when you have a new boss, and your natural instinct is to bury the old boss because you have a new boss. And you know what? That's not always the case. The old boss might have done a great job, and you're just burying him because he's out of the picture. So that's the natural thing to do. Who knows? I just want to let everyone know I'm behind CWF. I hope to go forward in a positive momentum. Change this gigantic bump in the road, allow some different creative forces in there. The key is you got to have a direction. I don't want to hear, see this go back to Battlecade number 4, where all there was billed was for one main event and nothing else. Everything was thrown together. That what makes CWF special, we've said it before, is the episodic television it feels from week to week on the shows. And part of that is the booking. Part of that is the editing with Grant. It's got to stay. That's the most important thing about this promotion. And then you have the incredible talent base. But if you don't make us care about the talent, you could have a whole roster full of John Cena's or Okada's or Kenny Omega's, or what have you, a whole roster of Trevor Lee's, and we're not going to care if you don't make us care, and put them in the light to make us care. Just remember about that. It's all intertwined. All right, so let's get on to Battlecade. The opening match was Logan Easton LaRue versus the returning Andrew Everett. What'd you make of this, man?
I really dug the underdog selling from Everett. I thought was done really well. The opening high spots from him were good, and then he kind of makes his own mistake there and hurts his arm. Then gets worked over. I loved the arm work from Logan. Logan making the most of that. I feel like Everett's comeback was a little too quick, and then he wins pretty quickly after that with the the shooting star press off the top. I felt that the booking and the stuff on here, I understand, because I don't know if you know this, but this match caused a little bit of drama in the behind-the-scenes situations with the relationship between CWF and Nova Pro, and I can see
why. And PWI.
Why. What?
And the PWI.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, technically the PWI.
Yeah.
But to me, yeah, I see why. I mean, Everett, like I said, his cutoff was caused by himself. He couldn't even give Logan the cutoff. He comes back pretty easily and gets the win pretty easily. Feels, you know, not a lot of... I mean, I think that Logan made the most of what he got, which was the arm work in the middle, but really it was very little given to him. And, you know, he was a big part of Nova's booking going forward, and including this title belt and including him. So I can definitely see where the issues come from. It felt like they got big leagued a little bit there, unfortunately, but that's what happens when you're working with someone and you're using someone's title belt and their lineage and you're doing all this stuff, is you leave yourself open for something like this to happen. That said, I gave the match 3 stars. I really liked it. The two really talented guys, but it was not, I guess I would say, it was booked really good for CWF, but I don't know that it was booked well for Nova. And I think CWF is also kind of short-sighted in that Logan could have been a guy for them too. And they kind of, I think, really neutered him here.
Yeah, I have quite a little bit of different take. I thought they were more angry on not being able to get dates on Everett.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's part of it too, obviously.
Because, I mean, if they have a title that they can't even get him to drop it for it. It makes it difficult, you know. I don't know if they, if there's a title chance they didn't agree with, that's fine. But to me, it's like, how are you going to get Andrew Everett now? He's on a Japan tour. That was the first time he wrestled in CWF since last year.
Right.
So I would be more worried about getting the belt back in the company.
Well, yeah, I mean. But if you think about it, I mean, that's the same problem for Nova, too. I mean...
Yeah, and that's why Nova is separated from PWI.
Yeah, because they know they're not going to be able to get title... They're not going to get title defenses out of Everett. And I'm pretty sure, had plans, based on their booking, for where they were going with Logan still having this title. So, right. You know, I get what you're saying, is that they may have been okay with the title switch, and they may have not cared as much about Logan kind of, I don't want to say getting buried, but not being given much of a chance to shine here, if they thought that they were going to be able to then use Everett as the champion still, and they're clearly not going to be able to.
I think they're angry about Logan dropping the belt because they knew they weren't going to get dates on Everett.
Yeah, well, I think not being able to get dates on Everett adds insult to injury, honestly. Yeah. I think that makes it even worse for them. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, but my point is, if he didn't drop it, they wouldn't have to worry about the belt getting the dates on Everett. I think they felt they should have ownership of the belt more so than Mid-Atlantic. But I mean, I don't even know what exactly PWI, what exactly they are. I'm a little confused.
Well, okay, so I'll explain. PWI, you know, the figurehead is Everett's dad, right?
Right.
And he's a partial owner of CWF. PWI is like the IWGP. It's a governing body that, I mean, doesn't really exist in any real way that CWF uses to say runs these belts, this belt and the international title that CW Anderson had. So, yeah, that's what PWI is. Think of it like
And a lot of people said it was a Converse glory belt for a while, too.
Right, Rick Converse. I mean, I guess you could say that it's a way to keep...
Where he always ends up winning it back eventually.
Yeah, it's not. You could say it's like the $1 million belt thing or something like that, or the Texarkana belt, you know, something along those lines where it's more of a gimmick than a real championship for Rick Converse. But I think Rick Converse history speaks for itself as a big time guy for the Mid-Atlantic, and he deserves to have some kind of title if you want to say it's like it's the Legends belt or whatever. It's the old timers championship that he's going to always kind of lose and win and use to defend and make some angles and stuff. I mean, realistically, what's the difference between that and the, I'm trying to think of it. It's the USWA belt that Lawler would kind of use back and forth. I mean, realistically, has the same amount of like prestige.
Well, the USAW belt was essentially the Memphis belt. I mean, it was,
right,
the belt, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying Lawler did the same thing. He would lose it and then win it back. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, constantly. Yeah,
yeah.
That's the only way, because he was the star of the promotion. He had to instantly put somebody over, and the easiest way to do it was to be to drop the belt.
Right. Exactly. So I'm just saying it's like basically the same concept. So yeah, that said, the match was fine. What do you think of the match?
I enjoyed it. I gave it 3.25. I enjoyed Everett at the start. I thought it was some fun spots. I thought it was a solid shine. The big bump by Everett to set up the heat, I enjoyed that. LaRue works the arm. I thought Everett sold it really well. I really enjoyed LaRue's heat on it. Everett on a comeback was good, and they cut him off. I love the how the row rolled away from the big move, but then Everett posts himself, and so he's back on the arm. So I mean, I thought they told a good story in the match and stuff, and I thought it was perfect for where it was on the card. You know, on paper, I thought this could be a show stealer. Didn't quite get there, but I thought it was still a really good, solid match. Then we get Brad Attitude versus Chet Sterling, which I thought was the best match on the card. We get this perfect start between the two guys. They're brawling. You see them in the luxury box. They're brawling on Dylan's lap. And we get a big shine by Chet, by him standing tall, babyface. Just big brawl. Very hate-filled. Then it morphs into more of a wrestling match. And Attitude's after the neck based off the angle. Off the rumble angle, which is just great. I always love when there's payoffs to angles in matches, and we're getting in here. Chet is great at putting over Attitude's credentials and his offense and the whole entire thing. Sterling is selling is very Southern, and that's a compliment. That's a great compliment I'm giving him. Love Attitude's pushing the ref to crotch Sterling. I love that. Attitude with a flare top rope crotch. That was nuts when he took the bump on the ropes. Attitude looks like he's almost broke his neck off that Rana, but he looks like he's okay. I thought the match went a little bit too long. Where I think I would have cut like 2 minutes off because they used that big boot like twice and some of the stuff got a little repetitive. But I thought this was hate-filled, super heated, great story. And I thought the psychology of Attitude is what working over Sterling's neck was tremendous based off the angle. Like I said, I just love the payoff of an angle where it goes when you do something and we're talking about the booking. They made a big deal about this at the Rumble, and he ends up, Sterling hurts his neck, and then at Ultimate Survivor, they play up and on that, and here we get to even go into Battlecade, and we're still playing off that angle. That's just good, solid booking, and so the new booker needs to be able to follow these type of a trend here, and this is great storytelling, man. What about you? What do you think of it?
Yeah, a lot of the same feelings. One thing that I found very interesting is comparing kind of Brad's style as almost the CWF Undertaker. He's kind of a special attraction type, and he works the big shows and usually the lead up into the big shows, and works a real methodical match here where he pretends like he's gonna, you know, dust off a big move, you know, the big Spanish fly off the top, only to get that forwarded into a big kind of a crotched on the top rope spot there. And just all that about his style being very toned down, very methodical, very kind of
work. Psychology-based.
Psychology-based. All of that. And then you compare him as his age, his experience, to, I'm going to take like a random person, but say like Kenny Omega. Like, Kenny Omega's been wrestling longer than Brad Attitude. You know what I mean? And his matches are crazy spots, sure, they have psychology, all this insane work, top level. But Brad is, I mean, it's kind of that idea of the Southern worker who's able to tone it down, really act like a legend, get the most out of everything he's doing. And it's super, super impressive the way he makes it feel like a big deal and he feels like something huge. He's, you know, he's very clearly toned down his wrestling. He's not working very often. I mean, geez, you know, half dozen matches per year for the past couple of years, but he makes them count. He makes them feel like a big deal. Great stuff here with Chet. So just like you talked about the stuff in the opening, I think Chet did a great job making himself very clearly the endeared, babyface to the crowd. Crowd super loves him, super big into him, brawling all around. Great comebacks. I thought the first opening heat, I think that Chet kind of died. But then when he started to come back, I think he did a good job of showing fire and fight from underneath throughout. So just that little bit, I think he needs to tighten up slightly in that regard when I talked about last, or maybe a couple weeks back, about what is it going to mean for him in this big match as being possibly the next big star of the company. I think, you know, he needs to hit the ground running when it comes to stuff like that. This little details, I put over Tanahashi huge for being a guy who has that fire the whole way through, no matter what. I want to see something similar from Chet, but he did, you know, I think he caught himself and started to show that fire even while he was selling, and really helped, like, throughout the close of the match. Big stuff, great spots, great psychology. I get what you're saying. They could have toned it down a little bit, but they, you know, it almost does feel kind of like that Undertaker match that for a couple of years there, you could say, like, went a little long. You know, the first Shawn Michaels match really good, then the second Shawn Michaels match, maybe that was a little too long. You could say both Triple H matches going too long, you know what I mean, where it starts to feel like they're going overkill just for the sake of overkill. And so I could see a little bit of that here. But that said, still really good match. I gave it 3 3/4 stars. And I would say to this point, match of the show. But I don't necessarily know if I would continue to say it's match of the show for the entire card. But definitely big stuff. Delivered huge in the clutch where they needed a big time match that felt important and epic.
All right, man. Next up was Kane Justice versus Nick Richards. And I think we both agree that this was the match that was probably built up the best on all the shows leading into it, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we were hot angles, really into it. Good promos. Yeah, totally. I bought into it, hook, line, and sinker. We get about a 4-minute match. What you make of it, man?
I liked it for what it was. I gave it 2 3/4 star just because there wasn't enough meat on the bone. But I think if you're trying to push forward with Kane Justice, I think it was a good showing for him to look like a star going forward. I think there was a lot of great emotion. I think it showed that you can have a, you know, 3-minute match, that 4-minute match that brings it. But yeah, they just didn't, you know, they obviously just didn't have the time. They didn't give them the time. And I don't know if this was the match, you know, like we both said, we were excited. I don't know if this is the match that I sacrifice if it was about cutting time off the show, or if it was really just the idea that they just wanted to really strongly have Kane looking good coming out of it. I don't know what the idea was there.
Yeah, it seems like they had a story, which is Nick Richards is, you know, losing confidence, or he doesn't believe in himself, and this is a way to push Kane stronger. So I kind of get it. I wanted a 15-minute match out of these guys, and hopefully we'll get it down in the future. But what we got was awesome. I give it 3 stars. I think I was talking to Dylan online, and I think we called it the Jerry Lawler, the CWF Mid-Atlantic's Jerry Lawler versus Snowman epic feud match, where it was all shoot, hate-filled, totally hate-filled. Feels like a fight between two guys who freaking hate each other, and we get this incredible finish where Kane looks like he's about to break Nick's arm, just catching him. No problem with what we got. I mean, what we got was awesome. I just wanted more meat, like you said, more meat on the bone. It felt like this was like an appetizer to our grand course of what we're going to get eventually from these guys. Hopefully that's what we're getting. Maybe we'll do some cross with McAllister and Nick Richard training video a la Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat when they're doing, getting ready for the final conflict. With Sil Hunter and Canoodle to go with the old Carolina theme and getting Nick ready for a run against Kane or whoever. I still enjoyed the hell out of the match. Then we got C.W. Anderson and Rick Converse promos, and I thought these were fantastic. I mean, just well done. What about you?
Yeah, I'm super excited, and they're making the Converse versus C.W. Anderson match feel like a big deal. They've been doing it with the angle, obviously talked about on the Go Home episode, and then with the promo packages, too. They're making
it. Yeah, and I thought this was the second best build on the show, and I actually even argue that it was the best built stuff. But I'm more invested in the Kane and Nick Richards since they're week-to-week characters. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, for sure. I get what you're saying there. To me, I really like it, though. So do I. Yeah, but
I actually think they gave them the harder angles with CW and Converse, and they put them in event to mean more than Kane and Nick. But because, again, we talk about it, you know, it's like the 10 shows a year type of thing, or the guys there weekly. I was more invested in the weekly build, because I don't buy into the I like CW and I like Converse, but I don't buy into the auras of either man really truly has. So I mean, that's something that maybe more of the local people might have, or the long term CWF fans might buy into that. And I was never a big ECW guy, so the playing off that finish with Tommy Dreamer really didn't do a whole hell of a lot for me either. With that said, I enjoyed the match. I Quit versus Career, I thought it was very methodical. I enjoyed Anderson destroying the arm. I thought everything it was hate filled. They told a story, but I felt they were in a rough spot having to follow that sprint, which the crowd was into and died on with Kane and Nick, because that match got over huge, especially Kane in the setting. And then this had to follow it. I gave it like 2 3/4. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't anything I was blown away by. What were your thoughts?
I think I'm pretty much have like a lot of the same feelings. I thought that following up after the Kane and Nick Richards match being a little feeling, I'm not going to say like a letdown, but definitely feeling like I was expecting more, I think really kind of did hurt this match in some ways. At least for me, it made me like, I don't know how to put it, like, but it did. I don't know, like, if that doesn't make any sense or if that's like, you know, kind of unfair to them. But yeah, I think that the flow of the card, I guess I could say, was hurt by that fact, that this match was like good, but it felt a little slow and plodding at times. I think I've talked about Last Man Standing matches being really low on my list of great matches. I think I Quit matches this style, where you're working for the audible I Quit, also have some issues. I think they broke out some good gimmicks, especially the finish, or you know, near the finish. I thought with the beer bottle breaking was really good. But yeah, I just I didn't get super into it, and I'm with you. I think this is another one too. It's, you got to be super invested, especially in Rick Converse, and I think the local fans are really into something like this. I gave it 3 stars, and I thought that they did a good job with the gimmick, but I think it's a hard gimmick, especially for me, because I feel like you really break down the momentum of the match going over and over again to the microphone. But they did do a good job, like I said, in the finish. I felt like the drama of the actual finish itself worked. It's just sometimes throughout the match, stopping and going to the microphone did break up the flow in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I agree. I still will say I thought this was an excellent part of night 2 of Battlecade. And it's really shaping up to that this Battlecade was deeper than last year's Battlecade. I don't think it's going to hit the highs that last year's did, but I think it was deeper, where we had a more variety of better matches. I think we'll end up having more 3-star matches on this show than we did last year's, but I don't think it's going to hit the highs that last year's did, like the memorable moments.
Yeah, I think that's for sure. That's correct. I think I think overall this is a better show, really. I think the whole card is a lot deeper. Yeah, for sure.
I think top to bottom it's better, but I still don't know if it's a better card overall, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I feel you.
With that said, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll talk some reality wrestling.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place Dicey Munitions, JT Rosero, and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back with Reality of Wrestling, Booker T's promotion in Corpus Christi or Houston, Texas. I can't remember. It's Texas City. And it's on the Fight Network. You can also get it on YouTube. But this is part of their season final show. This is their last three big matches on it. This is their Christmas Chaos show. And because this show wasn't going to be on their YouTube this week, it was just going to be on the Fight App Network exclusive. I mean, it's still free, so check it out. It was their final three matches of the Christmas Chaos show. And we get the first match is Cameron Cole versus Abel Andrew Jackson for their TV belt. What'd you make of the match, man?
I don't know. I didn't get much from it, honestly. Stevie, you know, I feel like the match was window dressing for the hoopla on the outside, and I just felt like the guys in the match, the TV champion, I don't even remember his name, honestly, coming out of it.
Cameron Cole. Now it's Abel Andrew Jackson.
But Cameron Cole, I felt like he felt like an afterthought. Stevie Ray on the floor helping them cheat was like the big part of it. Then you get the Aussie tag team out, and they help him win and everything, and I don't know. I mean, I just didn't get into the match. It felt like the match was an afterthought, so it made me not care about it. I gave it 1 star. I was not impressed by this at all.
I liked it more than you. I gave it 1 star and 3/4. And I'm with you on the whole entire thing about the window dressing. I thought the action was solid. And I liked the BS finish in a bottle, but then they kind of went back to that in the main event a little bit. So it kind of came across really samey. If they protected the finish, it might have been more better, you know, not better, but would have worked better. We're having the heel team beat down the babyface, and then you have the babyface chasing and going after revenge. But that only works once, but once you have, and then here he wasn't able to overcome it. And we'll get to the main event later, but the babyface overcame the La Familia interference. Having two of them on the same show and two in your final three matches is a little rough, you know. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. I liked Stevie Ray when he's putting the boots to Cole because he was getting a ton of heat there. And then I liked the ref throwing Stevie Ray out, but then he gets more people involved. And we never really were able to get a story going because it seemed like it was, again, like you were saying, it was more window dressing of a way to get the title off Cole than actually using the match to get either one. I mean, you get Jackson over a little bit because then you progress the story because with the promo later on, and we'll get to that in a bit. But yeah, it was definitely window dressing. Then we get a Rex Andrews interview, and I thought he did a really good job getting his character over. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I've been loving him in this character, and I think he does a really good job with this promo. I talked about it. He makes sure that he has a point that he's getting to, and he gets to it, and it feels real. It doesn't feel like it feels like planned, but not scripted, which is really, really well done.
Yeah. Then we get Team Stevie Ray, and they're having problems even with Abel Andrew Jackson with the belt. Everyone's a little jealous because they won the belt for him. He's taking all the glory. So I enjoy that they're teasing problems with it. It's a good storytelling device. But I will see if I care. I kind of like Jackson because he's so cheesy. But we'll see. But I don't like the other guys he's with. I find them jabroni-esque. What you make of it?
Yeah, and maybe it's just because I haven't seen everything. But to me, I'm not really invested in this unit because it felt like they've been kind of bickering the whole time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hopefully this just gets into whatever the angle is going to be, and then that can be pretty good, because up until this point, I'm not super invested in this.
And then we get a Gino interview, and I thought it was okay. What about you?
Fine, yeah, but I'm going to have plenty to say about Gino here in a little bit.
Okay. And then we get Davidson and Q crossing paths, with Davidson congratulating Q. They had a big hate-filled feud like a year ago over the belt. And so I think they might be planting a seed here. I'm not sure. But it doesn't hurt. It gets people talking. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was good. And I thought him giving him the thumbs up or whatever he did. And Q, I guess, doesn't necessarily wear the mask all the time. I knew who it was underneath because I looked it up before. But I didn't realize that it was an open thing that you know who he is.
Yeah, it's a weird gimmick. I agree. And then we get Mysterious Q versus Rex Andrews versus Johnny Mundo. You know, I like this. I gave it 3 stars. But, I prefer Rex Andrews says singles matches, three-way dances with a submission artist is always hard to pull off. I liked Andrew trying to steal the win early on. Love Andrew after Q's arm early on again. A big miss by Mundo. I was loving all of Andrew's near submission works and stuff. But yeah, there was a lot of cool stuff. I loved how the finish played out. And I thought all guys worked pretty solidly. But it just seemed like, at least they did it well enough where they'd have it one-on-one and then someone would bump out of the ring and be one-on-one. So they did a good job of rotating it all. But I think I'd rather prefer a singles match between any one of these, Andrews versus whoever of these two. A three-way, I think, just cheapens the Andrews as a worker and stuff. I think Mundo, Q, and somebody else could have had just as good of a three-way and put Andrews in with anybody else. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that any time in the match when Andrews wasn't involved, I think the match got kind of boring at times. But I liked Andrews working for different arm bars, different submissions throughout. Love the opening charging knee from Andrews on Q. That looked really good. But that said, you talk about them like kind of cycling in and out. I think that they did a terrible job of that because it just felt so blatant that it was
I can buy into that argument. When I think about it,
yeah,
it really did seem really rudimentary.
If you consider that necessary to a three-way match, then I could say that they did a good job. But if you would it make logical sense, or like were they going out of their way to like make it like kind of fit and do some stuff in between? I don't think they did. I think that they just blatantly made sure to constantly have only 2 people in the ring. I gave it 2.75. I guess close to you. I liked some of the action. I thought Andrews was good. I thought Andrews' build was good, but I thought that this should have been a one-on-one match. This did not need to be a three-way.
Yeah. I liked Andrews' rolling clothesline coming into the ring.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. And then we get to the main event of Gino versus Aiden Christiano in a Lucha Extreme match. And we get a little promo segment with Christiano prepping for the match. I thought that was fine. And then we get the match. What did you think of everything?
Yeah, the promo was good. Everything that had to do with Christiano was pretty good. The problem was Gino, man. I mean, the guy was just bland, boring, gave me almost no emotion, I felt like.
Did he feel like, for me, he felt like Okada face a bit?
Yeah, at times. And he's got the similar kind of size and maybe even the same hair. At times he's just, he didn't seem like he was there. And this was a big heated brawl that needed to be built on emotion. And I didn't get the emotion at all. He seemed checked out for the most part. Yeah, they're brawling all over the building. You know, I thought Cristiano was doing a good job. He set up some nice near falls. He's selling his ass off while he's violently getting attacked in the crowd. But yeah, like I said, Gino giving me nothing is just boring, boring. You get the La Familia involved and they help with some bullshit. And then Gino just feels like he's taking insane punishment. Cristiano is going just weapon after weapon, attack after attack with him on the mat. And this is where I need that big underdog, you know, El Generico sell job, Ricky Steamboat sell job. It wouldn't have hurt it if there was a little bit of blood as well. It would have helped the matches, you know, feel a little bit better too. But no, I'm just getting nothing but this big kind of bland, nothing going, no emotion face on this kid while he's getting beat up. Like I said, Cristiano was good. I think he single-handedly carried this match to the 2-star rating that I give it. But Gino, I mean, God, he just felt like a non-factor here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was not a fan of Gino in the match. I like Cristiano. It's flat out incredible here because he carried this to me for 3 stars. I like the fighting all over the floor. Gino in control. You know, I liked his dive, and then he dove right into it. I'm like, fine. They did a Rana that was off in timing. I felt they did a very WWE-style brawl with huge bumps and big spectacle stuff, and I got into that. I had no problem with that, and that's not a slam for this match. But yeah, Gino was kind of like too Okada face, like too stoic. I thought it was a fun spectacle brawling, but at times there was stuff that was off. But Gino definitely brought it down, and then they give the guy the belt. It just, you know, it was like, you know, then you had La Familia all come out and they're all triple teaming them and they're putting all this heat on the guy who's not showing any emotion or fire. Like you said, Steamboat, Ricky Morton in the same role would have been just incredible. Yeah, Gino definitely needs to learn some fire because, yeah, that was just, I don't know, maybe it was just, I don't know if it was a cultural thing because I've seen Negro Casas and Luchadors sell a hell of a lot more than that, and yeah, the facials were just—it was really bothering me because it was like this was supposed to be this emotionally packed match, and Gino's showing like nothing, and that's actually been a knock of his when I've seen him live too. It's like he just doesn't show any fighting, or like he gives a shit, like he knows that we're watching a fake match, and I just don't like it. But I thought Cristiano did it enough to carry it to funness. But overall, I was kind of disappointed in everything. I think they could have done better in all 3 matches. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. This was a disappointment, man. And they're not going to put it on the YouTube, and they're making a big deal out of it. And then this is what they deliver, and it's just kind of a little bland across the board, honestly.
Yep, I was disappointed. I'm still invested because I'm a big, I still think there's a lot of stuff to like about the promotion, like the tag division and Ryan Davidson and I like Cameron Cole at times. Rex Andrews, of course, I think is incredible. So I want to give it a few more weeks to see what happens. If we have to, we can always drop it. Right now, I want to see what they do in the new year going forward because I'm assuming Rex Andrews is going to be going after that world belt eventually because I think he's outgrown the Texas belt. On that note, why don't we take a break? And on that, we'll come back and finish up with some NXT.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. and on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed. We offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back with the most current episode of NXT, and we're looking at a Shayna Baszler video angle where she ends up choking out her opponent by her opponent giving up her body to her to show her something. I don't know. I thought that angle was a little over heavy-handed, to tell you the truth. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, I can see that. I thought Shayna was very good in it, but yeah. I can definitely see that the setup was a little, maybe a little bit too much, a little over the top. You think that's how it's done? Let me show you. And then she chokes her out, and then did Ember Moon show up to help stop her too? And I mean, that's good to set up for the title match and everything, but yeah, I can definitely see thinking it's a little bit over the top. But I thought Shayna...
Yeah, I know the whole of the terminology. Here, let me put you in the hole so you know how it feels like type shit. It's like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we got Baszler versus Dakota Kai. And again, I thought this was a really good way of setting up Baszler for a big push. And then you had Ember coming in for the save. Now, I like this aspect of it, of this part of the angle, the actual match part. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, this was fantastic. I hear people going wild for it. I think Shayna is just showing exactly what I've talked about, that she just has instant kind of star presence, badass kind of aura on her. The second she comes out there, she feels like just a fucking kick-ass monster here, attacking the elbow, won't let it go after the match has even stopped, and she chokes her out. And I think Kai was a perfect lamb for the slaughter here, undersized, plucky underdog babyface. I think she could actually do something here going forward because the crowd can get into her. But right now it's all about Shayna. And I think, Shayna hits the ground running. The division, I think, when Ember Moon won the title, there was a lot of questions. What is there? And I think that Shayna has really just completely hit the ground running. She feels like a big part of the women's division now. And she instantly feels like a killer. So fantastic stuff.
Yep. And then next up, we get this Authors of Pain promo. This is horrible. Absolutely horrible. I can't believe they let it. I can believe they let it air because they probably thought it was good. But I thought this sucked. What about you?
I wouldn't say I thought it sucked, but I like the Authors of Pain shouting in their native language in the matches, but I don't know that it necessarily worked in this setting. I thought that after last week when I talked about that, it was one of the best promos from Paul Ellering when it came to the Authors of Pain stuff. Then this week, yeah, it was not hitting that same high mark. And I don't think that they necessarily need to let the Authors of Pain guys talk on video. I think that it worked that they shouted at each other during the matches, but it doesn't work as well on a supposedly pre-produced mat or
comes video. Across. Yeah, it comes across forced.
Yeah.
Then we get a Baszler interview with Regal, and she totally disrespects and blows off Regal. You don't see that too often, so I thought it really added a layer to her character. I thought it was a good piece of business. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, even Pete Dunne shows some respect or some fear for Regal. She was indifferent and nothing, and I think it was a good job to be able to have a character who's different, who stands out in that Rebel role, because like I said, I think you could easily...
Especially a woman.
Yeah, that helps too. I think you could easily compare it to Pete Dunne, and she could have easily been similar to Pete Dunne in the same setting, but she was her own thing and totally different, and I think they did a good job with that.
Then we got Cassio Ohno versus Raul Mendoza. A fun little match to highlight Hero. What do you think of it?
Yeah, going into it, I thought, oh, this is going to be a slaughter. And then I remembered what the fuck I'm talking about. It's Chris Hero, or Cassius Ohno. So he's smart enough to make sure that he gives Mendoza something so that it means something when he puts him down. So, you know, Mendoza gets some offense, but he looks good, but not enough, nowhere near enough for Ohno, who puts him down with the electric chair drop into the elbow and then the rolling death blow, and it's over. And yeah, good stuff for Shining Hero back up after taking that loss to Gargano. Mendoza's obviously a guy people are into, but he's not a big enough thing that it matters, and it gives some scalp for Hero to or Cassius Ohno to take.
Yep. And then that leads us to a Selena Vega interview. What'd you make of it?
She's very good when she's talking about Andrade. I think that's nothing new. Everybody knows yep. this, but she is super great in this role. She makes him feel like a big deal because she, you know, says all the right words, says all the right stuff. And yeah, she is fantastic at this, and I did not expect it because in TNA she was like kind of just there. Didn't expect much from her. It took him so long to finally sign her into WWE. She was never a great worker, and then now it feels like they found the perfect spot for her. It's crazy because I thought she was just another one of these, you know, good-looking girls who can barely wrestle, but she has so much personality, great promo. She stands out because she's, you know, ethnic. I'm not, you know, as bad yeah. as that kind of sounds. She is, though. Like, she stands out because of that, because she's the only Latino girl that they have as a manager cutting promos, so she really stands out. It's really, honestly, a great part of the show now.
And then we got a Gargano interview, which is interrupted by The Dream and setting something up there. What do you think of it?
It was interesting. I thought Dream coming back here, kind of out of nowhere. He wants his spot that Gargano stole from him in the tournament, so now he's going to get the match from him. Makes sense, I think. Good speed bump on the way for Gargano to the title, and hopefully Dream can still look good coming out of this, because I assume he's probably going to lose in a TV match here against Gargano. But, I think it's been long enough that people kind of forgot that he lost to Black, and they just remember that it was a really good match. So he's actually...
I was going to ask you, it feels like he's almost lost all his momentum almost.
I think yes, but I think that people do remember that it was a good match, and I think that any kind of possible negativity from losing is gone. But I do think that now he's going to lose again to Gargano, and I could definitely see where you're saying that they could have definitely capitalized on him a lot better than
they did. Yeah, they definitely could have done some really cool video packages and pushed a narrative that needed to be different than, yeah, he lost, but they could have definitely pushed, but he might have lost with the 1-2-3, but he won by getting his name mentioned, said, some video packages that way, and made it seem like a big deal, but I think they lost all their momentum on that.
But could you see that that might have been an issue because it would have babyfaced him a little bit too much, and maybe that's the thing, is they don't want to turn him babyface?
That's possible. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know for sure that they were, you know, smart enough to think that through.
But I'm a firm believer in doing stuff organically. And, I mean, yeah, doing video packages isn't organic, but if it turns you babyface because of a moment, you should always grab lightning in a bottle.
Yeah. I agree. I think they should have just went with it. But I could definitely see someone overthinking it and saying, well, let's cool him off because we don't want him to turn babyface. And that's just the wrong move. It's like, figure it out. Let him go babyface.
Yeah, timing's everything. And if you miss the timing, then you might never be able to turn him face. That's the plan is, oh, let's save it to when we want to do it. Well, that's not good. Yeah, you want to do it at the right time, when it means the most money for you or the most impact for you. Then we get the Street Profits and Regal, and they get Authors of Pain. I hate the Street Profits. What about you?
Yeah, I did not get into this. I don't care. I almost want to just stop talking about the Street Profits unless it's a match that we just absolutely must review.
Maybe we'll think about that. Lars Sullivan versus Leo Rush. I thought this was a great squash. And then I thought the promo by Lars afterwards was great, and he wants Dane. I liked it. I thought it was fantastic. I thought the whole segment was fantastic. What about you?
Yeah, I found it interesting that the Dream and Leo both showed up back on the same episode. After both being gone for a little bit. I wonder if this is a, you know, eat your shit and take your punishment for Leo, or if they really just have nothing planned for him, because it felt like this was a match that you wouldn't give to someone that you expect something out of, because he just gets murdered. He looks fine getting murdered, though. I mean, he's a pretty good seller for the big man offense here. And then Lars' post-match promo is, I mean, that's like, it's the good shit, man. I love it. I'm excited for the Dane match, and I think Lars is, I mean, he's ready. He honestly yep. feels like he's ready to be, you know, strapped a rocket to and go to the big time.
Agreed. And then we got an Undisputed attacking Sanity backstage, and that takes them out of the match. So we get O'Reilly and Fish with Strong and Black. Strong accepts the challenge first, and then Black joins him on stage for an even bigger pop. What you make of it, man?
Yeah, this is a match that, like, PWG, ROH, something like that would probably have been like a, could have been like a 4 or 5 star match or something. I mean, it's crazy amount of talent here. That said, this match itself was, had a little bit of overbooking issues with Black disappearing to go chase after Cole and set yeah. up kind of that feud and all that that affected it. But I thought Black, I thought looked really good selling, which is an improvement for him because I thought on the indies he was never really a solid seller. I thought he looked good here. Then that, of course, sets up Roddy with the killer hot tag. I think that there was no way that you could get around that if you're going to have these two as a team. You got to have Roddy hitting that hot tag, right? He's the fucking man in the hot tag. Thought Red Dragon looked great as a well-oiled machine. You got Cole with the distraction, again, playing up the numbers. 3-on-1. Or the 2-on-1 to put Roddy down, then afterwards 3-on-1 to kill Black. You got Cole setting up a feud, and I think this is a perfect feud for Cole, because I think if there's anybody on this NXT roster right now that could possibly carry Adam Cole to a match and feud that I'm going to give a shit about, it's going to be Aleister Black. Just after that great showing that he had with the Dream, I think he's shown that he could definitely deliver, even with people that you don't necessarily know what to expect. Or I guess even with people that you don't have high expectations for. So I think that him and Cole could actually probably have something good here.
I totally agree with you. I gave it like 3 stars. I thought it was good. I thought it was the best O'Reilly and Fish have looked as a tag team in NXT. I thought it was a good show overall, top to bottom. What about you, man?
Yeah, great episode of TV. As long as you're accepting yeah. that it's an episode of TV and you're not thinking yeah. of it, you know, as bigger than that, it was really good.
Exactly. You know, I've been watching a lot of the Mid-Atlantic drop on the network, and it's very similar to Mid-Atlantic, except the matches are better. I mean, they're better here on NXT because there's some that you're going to hit the 3-star range on Mid-Atlantic TV. I've been hearing, oh, I want to watch, can't wait to watch the matches. That's not how they were back in the 80s. If you got out of they dropped 95 episodes on the network. If we generate 10 matches that are 3 stars or more in that 95, I'd be surprised because it was studio wrestling. Now, the studio wrestling is interesting in Mid-Atlantic because they gave especially in 81 and 82, because a lot of times they do it where the house shows, they do 7 matches on the show. 1, 2, or 3 of the matches are main event matches. Then, like, 4, 5, 6, and 7 are all undercard guys. So these guys are jobbing out all week. They're wrestling on the undercard because it was all about the main events back then. The undercard didn't mean anything. And so it didn't matter. So these jobbers would also, the matches on their TV were a little bit more competitive than your average squash match. Or, I mean, yeah, they'd be like 6 minutes long, but you know, the babyface team might only take 4 minutes of it, as opposed to eating it up like the whole entire match type of thing. But the structure's the same. But here on Mid-Atlantic, the promos are much better than what we're getting here on NXT. I feel the angles are better on Mid-Atlantic. But pretty much it's territory TV, except with usually they throw one really super strong match on there. So. With that said, good. I mean, like you said, as long as you take it as TV, it was a good, strong episode of TV.
Yeah, exactly. And as long as, NXT kind of is turning into a little bit of studio wrestling.
It is studio wrestling. And it was good that it was in center stage. We got a big, much, much bigger reactions than we were getting at Full Sail. So it was good to get away from Full Sail for a while.
Oh, I hadn't even really noticed. It's that WWE thing where they do, like, everything has to look kind of the same.
Yeah.
I didn't even really notice the past couple weeks that it's been in a different place. But now that you mentioned it, I realized it is.
Well, it's just this week.
Okay.
Just this week one. It'll probably be next week, too.
Yeah, right? Yeah, but now that you mention it, I realize that the building did look different than Full Sail. Okay.
Yeah,
well, yeah, that's
Atlanta.
Good.
Yep. And again, and they just like how they were in San Antonio, the crowd was much hotter for the acts than they were in Full Sail. Because you spoil the fans. I hate to say it. I mean, that's not a knock against the fans, but they get spoiled after a while.
Yeah, exactly. That's not the fans' fault that they're tired. I mean, you know, like realistically, that's not on them. It's on the promotion for not delivering something that gets them excited every time.
Yep, and you know, you also think about it that you know their stars back in the day are now huge, big stars on the WWF. So they come across as bigger stars than the current crop. So now. Now they just have a developmental territory. They have a territory that's competing against the WWE in a way. With that said, Tim, do you have anything you got to plug, brother?
Same old, man. Follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Check out the podcast Lucha Undead on PTP and Pomp. We did a little tripping and sipping episode. Me and Adrian just shot the shit, talked a little bit about politics and life and everything while we had a couple beers this week. Should be coming out here shortly. It was a lot of fun, and I think there's some funniness to it. So kind of going back to my roots of doing comedy podcasts, talking about the news and stuff, podcasting rather than interviewing. The next thing, got some big interviews coming out. I just turned in my We Don't Know Wrestling 100 ballot, so I recommend everybody else get out there and do theirs.
I am working on one, my friend.
Okay, I'll post mine on Twitter. If you want to look at it, I'll actually have it up there. You can see my full ballot, so you don't have to wait for it to come out. You can see what I thought, but I recommend everyone does it. And, yeah, that's all I got. Like I said, follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Cool. Follow me on wrestling at Titans O' Wrestling. Have a great week, and we'll keep on watching the wrestling for the new year. Hopefully the doom and gloom comes off 2018 quicker.
Yeah.
Have a good one.
These are the days I know. 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 David Hoffner, he works in my dad's store. He's worked here for 12 years. He'll probably work here for more. These are the days I know. These are the days I know. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. Dave Gord, I've known since I was 6. In grade he broke his leg, so we got drunk and sick. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. Some of them are Davids,
but most of us are Daves.
They all have their own hands, but they come from different moms. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. Dave Jadisky, man, this cat can swing. He weighs almost 50 pounds and he delivers my paper on time. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. Dave Capisano, I hardly know him. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. These are the days I know, these are the days I know.
We are the days he knows, he knows. We are the days he knows. We are the days he knows, he knows. We are the days he knows. Some of us are Davids,
but most of us are Davids.
We all have our own hands, but we come from different moms.
These are the days I know.
We are the days he knows, he knows.
These are the days.